All right, welcome back everyone to Get the Net. Can't wait for tonight's show. We got Mike Miller coming on. He's one of the funniest guys I know. He's the host of Angler and Hunter Television, old school derby angler from way back. He comes up and fishes KBI, and I'm sure he's got a lot of good stories we're going to get into. Looking forward to chatting with him, so stick around. We'll see you on the other side of the intro. Welcome to Get the Net, a fishing podcast that takes a deep dive into competitive events, fishing news, tips, tactics, and most importantly, interviews with some of the most interesting and in-tuned anglers from Canada to the central U.S. We're leaving no stone unturned to bring you the most raw and authentic dock talk. My name is Jamie Bruce. While my resume says bass, my frying pan says walleye, and I'm no stranger to the multi-species realm. Whether you're puttering on tackle, driving the bus, cutting the grass, or killing time in a 9-to-5, I'll try to give you something in every episode to take with you on the water, or at the very least, bring you a few laughs. All right, welcome back, everyone. She's been a madhouse around here. I'm happy to have an hour to sit down and talk fishing and have some laughs with my buddy Mike coming up here. So I'm looking at my new boat right now. It's another Pro V Bass. This is fifth one in a row and my seventh London in a row. I absolutely love these boats. We're going full on the rigging this year. I've been doing some lube tubing in the rigging process. I do the whole thing from scratch, and she's got all kinds of crazy riggings. If you haven't seen the battery video, check that out, and there'll be another one coming out in a few days on running clean power and organizing the wires and talking 16 volt powerhouses and 36 volters and 12 volt crankers and all kinds of good stuff that I get swamped with questions by. So schlapper all in a lube tube, a little more work hauling the old tripod around, but that's the way of the road. It's spring around here. If you haven't seen the my ice out video, I got stuck in my little outfitter out in some ice flows on Lake of the Woods, running down a limit of meat for the last day of the season, so give that a look. But that's pretty much the last time I've been fishing. It's, you know, been wide open around here, been puttering on tackle, getting ready for the walleye tournament season coming up here in the spring. Bass season in Ontario doesn't open to keeping, which you need to have a tournament till July 1st. So gonna mix in a few walleye derbies to fill the gaps there. Been making some, I got a couple little homemade walleye jigs I like making. So trying to sneak everything in, and yeah, for some reason I don't have as much time as I usually do. Might have something to do with the young lad in the house there. So all good on that front. But yeah, busy is good. We have it a little bit different up here than the Bass Pros down in the south. They do all the rigging in January and get their boat wraps and everything. For us, everything just happens a lot later because of the winter and because of ice fishing and procrastinating. But got the boat wrapped. if you follow me on Instagram at Jamie Bruce Fishing, you might have seen this green thing. A lot of people reached out and said they liked it. Got to question their judgment a little bit. I'm still on the fence. I had the draft I had done up, and what I had in my mind was kind of more of that olive drab. If you've seen my 17 foot Lund outfitter, it's kind of that duck style, you know, army green. And I pretty much have the green bastard from Trailer Park Boys sitting in front of me right now. It's definitely an eye catcher. So, you know, good for the sponsors. It's got the big Crush City logo on the side, Lake of the Woods 13 and Bass Tactics and all the other supporters on there. So good deal for them. She catches a lot of eyes. I don't know. Check out the rigging videos. Check out the Instagram pictures. Let me know what you think about her. But either way, pumped to be running one of these Lunds again. It's my absolute dream rig. And, you know, coming from where I came from back in high school, just lugging around a trolling motor and a battery and whatever boat we could pull out of wherever, you know, usually going a few rescue missions from some high school teachers, and everyone's got an old soggy boat somewhere, and that's how I learned fishing. So I don't take any of this stuff for granted, and yeah, super pumped again. So if you're in the market for a new Lund, check out WSL. And keep in mind, you don't, if you never fished a bass tournament before and you're not hardcore, you don't have to go out and buy a brand new Pro V Bass. You know, there's a lot of different options. They got a Renegade in the showroom, with a super cool little flat bottom with the same layout as a Pro V Bass, and just comes in way more at an entry level and still can do everything you need to do. So worth a look there. And before we get Mike on, He's a Crush City guy as well, so I'm sure you've heard a lot about it. You've seen a lot of tournaments won on it. It's not all fluff and marketing. It's good stuff, really good stuff, and you should definitely grab a pack down at Lake of the Woods Sports, and don't come whining to me in August when it's all out of stock and everyone's whipping your arse on it. And while you're there, I've been getting a lot of rod recommendation questions. You know, lots of entry level stuff or kind of that mid range. I always recommend the 13 Omens. There's a whole stack of them at Lake of the Woods. They're very reasonably priced. They do everything you need. I have a few of them I mix into the rotation, you know, fishing the opens with them. You don't have to have a super high end, you know, kind of same layout as the boat. They're really quality, and you can buy a handful of them, mix in a few different techniques. And if you want to get a little nicer, move up to the Envy, all that stuff. There's lots of other high end stuff coming, so keep an eye out for that. And if you watch the walleye video, the ice out, I was wearing an 11-year-old Sims Pro dry suit. One of those things where you can buy the flavor of the season suit and, you know, all these brands that pop up and have it waterproof for the first three outings and then just pretty much wearing around a piece of damn dry paper towel because it's not quality. So I've had that Pro dry for 11 years. You know how hard I go, and she still holds up. So I've obviously got new ones now, but it's one of those things where you don't have to buy it every year. You just buy it and you're done for a good long while. So check those out. That's Sims Pro Dry. And while you're on your little shopping spree, I'm sending you on here. Check out Smeltinator jigs, Smeltinator underspins, all that juicy BT stuff. We've got a lot of new stuff coming, all exclusively with Redline hooks this season. Some new tube heads emerging, end jigs with red lines. This is the future. Keep an eye out for it. And use the promo code if you're shopping online. It's Get the Net. And if you're looking for a destination this year, check out the Wabagoon Chain of Lakes. I can promise you I'll be heading there, heading to the Walleye Bastards with one of my oldest friends, John Engstrom. And we fished that tournament for several years when we were in our early 20s. And we're back at her this year. So definitely going to have entry to the Tagged Fish Contest. I'll probably get him to sign up. Might be a conflict if I do, but it's a really good deal there. Check out their Instagram page. You buy a ticket, it's $20, and you can win all kinds of cash. There's all kinds of loot there. And if you're looking for somewhere to eat this year, check out Nordic Point Lodge's restaurant. Went there for the old PR dinner last year. Super affordable prices. I shared the menu on my Instagram. I'll share it below. You know, really cool destination. Great big old portion of high-end food. They've got a really good chef there. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Open to the public. Give them a shout for hours, but it's going to be open right away here. And you might want to head on there for a nice little date night or bring the family or just go gorging with the boys. Whatever you want to do, check them out. Nordic Point Lodge. All right, that's enough of me rambling on, but that's the way of the road. You got to shout out the folks that keep this rolling. Bunch of really good brands I'm partnered with, and this doesn't happen without it. And it also doesn't happen without you liking, commenting, and subscribing. If you've been watching for a while, she's probably time to drop a subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything. You can do it probably while you're listening to this. You know, get two birds stoned at once, how they say. Make your little account, then you can comment, you can like, you can cyberbully me like everyone else does. And yeah, the subscribes go a long way. So thanks to everyone that's already subscribed. If you already are, drop a like, maybe comment something. And that's much appreciated. Enough of me rambling. Here's Mike Miller. BT Fishing is a northern-born, small-town tackle brand. Focusing on innovating rather than imitating, BT has left a mark on all levels of competitive fishing, from walleye tournaments all the way to the Bassmaster Classic. The full BT lineup is comprised of innovative tackle, carefully crafted using the highest quality components. Check out the Smeltinator jig, Elite Marabou jig, Crusher jig, Clackshot, Clean jig, Smeltinator underspin, and more at sportsheadquarters.ca. We ship across Canada and the US. Use promo code GETTHENET for 10% off all products in the BT lineup. This outdoor content has been brought to you in part by Nordic Point Lodge. Located in northwestern Ontario, Nordic Point Lodge offers some of the finest fishing Canada has to offer. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a corporate retreat, Nordic Point Lodge has you covered. They offer a luxury outdoor experience with 5-star service. Check out the description below for more information. I got you now. There's Mike Miller. How are we doing, boss?
I don't know. I lost my internet connection somehow.
You're doing way better now.
Yeah, I switched her over to one that's closer to me. I steal from the neighbors.
Oh, nice. You got a little extension cord plugged into their exterior socket too?
Yeah, you got that right. I learned that from Ricky. Run up the hydro pole.
I just made a trailer park boys. Two of them in the intro. One was two birds stoned at once for liking and subscribing, and the other was the green bastard boat wrap.
That is the green bastard boat wrap. I like that.
That was accidental. I was going for that like nice olive drab army green, you know, sleek, low key, and this damn thing you can see from Google Earth.
That's right.
What's going on your end?
Just trying to get spring here. It's not happening. It's been raining for about 9 days.
That's what spring is.
Man. Well, not down here, it's usually over by now. It's usually like summer. Shooting turkeys, baiting bears, that kind of stuff going on.
Got the TV show rolling.
Yeah. Killed a bird with the video camera out the other day and trying to get August a bird.
Yep. Well, get it done.
That's life. Is all the ice off?
No. Well, yeah. Like just today, probably. Well,
usually it's not till May, right?
It's usually within a week of May 1st. Sometimes The latest it's been was May 25th.
Wow.
The bottom of my boat got thrashed from that. And I think the earliest was like April 12th or something.
Wow.
Huh. Yeah. She's a pretty pretty big window. Are you when I ran into you last time at the Toronto, what's that show called?
Green Fishing and Boat Show.
The Andy Show.
That's right.
You were telling me you're thinking about coming back up to KBI. That's where we first met. And what's the plan for the return this year? Is it happening?
We're signed up, buddy.
Attaboy. I'm not signed up yet. Better get in there.
Yeah, well, I think we're like, I can't remember what team we are, but like 49 or something already.
Oh, you're on it. There's over 100 boats signed up already.
Yeah, no, we locked her in on the first day, April, whatever it was, and 15th maybe.
Nice. Do you have a fidget spinner or something you can borrow from all that? Oh, yeah, I can hear that.
I turned my microphone on to like no interruption. Sorry. Got ADHD. It is a fidget spinner. How'd you know?
Is that actually what it is? I just figured it was a pocket knife opening.
No, no, it's my SD card collection here. I'm always organizing.
Oh, okay.
Trying to multitask. Sorry, brother.
It's okay. It's okay. I only need a little bit of your attention for a little bit of time.
Yeah. Well, you got it all.
All right. So you're signed up for KBI. You had some funny stories about when you first started fishing KBI, like how that came together. I can't imagine what it must have looked like back in the day. When did you first start rolling on it?
You know, it's pretty crazy KBI, you know, like, 25 years ago, Nobody down here heard of it. Like the Azumi brothers were going up and fishing it, back then. I think the Lindners were probably fishing it regularly back then.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd have been like 99, 2000 ish. Right. And we were at the boat show, actually, probably 2002 or three, this would have been. And so Andrew Klopak, he was the president of Lund Boats at the time. He was talking about it. So, you know, I was repping Lund and we were in the Lund booth. And I said, oh, well, is there largemouth up there? And he said, yeah, guys, a few guys are catching them now. And I was like, oh, well, if there's largemouth there, pretty good chance we could just win it without even knowing much about the place, right?
Yeah, just like, a bunch of dumb rednecks up here. You should
be like where I'm from, the center of the universe, right? If we don't know about it, nobody knows about it. So, so he said, "Well, come on." And then at the Toronto International Boat Show, there's like this booth back then. I can't even remember what you might not even know. I don't, but the old nautical charts, like nobody had a GPS or that stuff was unheard of, right? The only electronics you had was like a 2D pixelated fish finder.
Like a Tamagotchi style.
Exactly. It was pretty old school. You know, you know how deep it was and what the water temperature was basically, right? So we went to this map place and busted out some of these maps that were like $40 each. And he showed it to me and I was like, wow, like that's a pretty serious body of water. But the first thing I noticed when I looked at it was all the swamps, right? And I said, I said, we could win that. I said, how are guys catching largemouth? And he said, I don't know, you know, I whatever they do. And I said, okay, well, I'm pretty sure we could win it. So he made a bet with me. It's actually how I got my Lund sponsorship, because I was just sort of, you know, riding one for a marina back then. And so anyway, we did a deal. He said, I'll give you a full sponsorship. We'll pay you and everything if you come up there and win. I said, no problem. So anyway.
Just filling with confidence.
Yeah. And that's what sold him on it. He goes, how can you be so confident? I said, well, I can win any tournament down here on largemouth bass. So, I mean, if there's like three or four guys catching them up there, I'm pretty sure I can come up there and outfish anybody. That guy was a bit of an egomaniac, but and Mercer and I were chums at the time, right? So Mercer kind of caught wind of it and said, I'm going to hop in on that deal too. So we went up together. And I think it was 03. I'd be lying if I knew the exact year. Okay. The archives don't go back that far, I think. They're chiseled on a rock somewhere in Kenora on the wall by the Stanley Cup championship from 1917 or whatever it was.
Thistles, baby.
The Kenora Thistles, yeah. So we got up there, and I went into the back of Snake Bay.
You sneaky devil.
Started flipping some undercut and crunching 3-pounders like they'd never seen a lure before. They just
come, which were tournament winning fish back then. Now they say, yeah, home in 100th place, but back then,
that's right.
14 a day was winning.
Yeah. So, I did that and I thought, oh, okay. You know, then I went and ran over to Mist Inlet and threw a frog around and caught a couple 5-pounders and said, he wasn't there. He wasn't practicing with me, right?
I got to pause this on the frog. I know you're a big mono guy to this day. So I don't remember when braided line came out.
It wasn't then.
So just a telescopic pool cue and 25-pound big game.
You got it. Yeah. Like just a stick, just a 7'6" stick.
Mitt.
You know? And you flung it like an old catapult from the medieval times, right, to get that frog out there.
Yeah, surf casting.
Yeah, but they were dumb up there. Like, they'd come from like 50 feet and chase it down. You just see them coming. Like, every third one was a pike. But I brought, so it's funny, like, not many people know this part of that. So I brought, most of my tackle was in like a shopping bag. I brought 50 flipping jigs, about 10 jars of pork, and you know, 30 frogs, and that was it. Like, that this was going to work, or else we were going to throw tube jigs at smallies, right? You know, so he pulled in, and on like the Wednesday for the meeting, that was when they used to have it at the hotel upstairs and the breakfast and everything. And it's right. A pretty big deal, right? Like, I'd never really been up there and saw how much they put into the tournament, so it was impressive. And we said, how'd it go? I said, buddy, if we don't weigh 14 pounds a day, there's something wrong. I said, we'll weigh 45 pounds easily. And he said, what? I said, yeah, you know. And he goes, that's what wins this tournament. I said, I know. I said, everywhere I went, I caught largemouth, and they're all like 3-pounders. I said, so, and I got a couple fives. So anyway, long story short, we did get big large. I got a 5-and-changer in that tournament. So we got big largemouth. We only ended up weighing like 42 or 43 pounds, though. Didn't quite go as planned. We finished 6th or 5th or something. And he was still impressed. And he said, oh, you know what? He goes, I didn't even expect to do very good at all. I thought you were just pulling my leg and being I was calling you basically on it, right? Is what he
was doing. Yeah. I didn't think you'd actually show up with a grocery bag full of frogs and jigs.
Well, you know, that's the only thing. It was, there's so many pike. Like, when you're fishing largemouth up there, you go through tackle like no tomorrow, especially when you're using mono, right? It's just like 1-in-3 bite off. So I think by the end of the week,
you could have used a steel leader.
You got that right. Yeah. By the end of the week, I think I had like two jigs left. I didn't have to fly home with any tackle anyway.
Nice.
But yeah, so that was kind of my first experience. And ironically, in the last, you know, quarter century, the largemouth fishing's kind of gone downhill, right?
Yeah, it's been one twice in the last 11 years on majority largemouth. Both were high water years.
Yeah, exactly. You need the high water. And I mean, the one thing about, you know, Lake of the Woods, I think, is those fish take a big boat ride, and getting them back to where they came from is probably impossible. So
yeah, and so many other like competing fish that all like down in the States, there's, you know, you go to these lakes, you drop your live scope down, you spin it. There's nowhere you can go in the South and not spin your live scope 360 and or hummingbird or whatever you got and see a fish to cast at. You know, and that's fine. There's just a bunch of like sleeper drum and white bass and all this weird shit.
Yeah, you name it.
But here they're all like predators, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of competition, and there's so many smallmouth walleye and pike that
they
can't really explode either. They just kind of get pushed, bullied into the corner, the worst bedroom on the lake, wherever they end up.
That's right. And I mean, you know, the water fluctuates up there so bad that, you know, one year you can get to the back of a swamp and catch all sorts of bass, and then the next year it's dry land. So
yeah. So you got a London deal. Now you got yourself a beautiful Pro V bass because you were a cocky kid with a telescope and flipping rod.
Yeah, and I, you know, I went back every year. I really have only missed a couple of years since. Like we did it a few times, and it's the irony in that whole story is, you know, it goes to show you how small the world really is. When I was up there back then, I don't know how your little crew of guys up there were pretty young lads, and I was introduced to Scotty Dingwall and Gussie back then. Yeah. They were just sort of young lads. Gussie, I guess, was fishing with his dad, I think.
Right. It probably would have been like his first one or two.
Yeah. He actually won one of the first couple of years I was up there. But anyway, you know, Andrew said, these guys here, I want to keep an eye on these guys. These guys are the real deal. You know what I mean? And so I started kind of chumming around them, picking their brains a bit, because I really had limited knowledge, and I was running down, like, you know, the old Pro V windshields back in the late 1900s there. They were some big plexiglass windows, and we used to have those clamps, and we'd clamp about six maps to the to the thing, and we'd run, and then you'd switch zones and you'd pull one map down and put another one up. So I was just driving around the lake looking at maps, right? And 50 feet to my right, there'd be like a reef that I didn't even know was there. So learning that lake was crazy. But now with technology now, it's unbelievable. Like, you can go anywhere you want in that lake. And you like, you know, the guys are running 70 miles just to go fish a frog for 15 minutes.
Yeah. Well, funny story about the frogs. I think the first year I fished, it was 2007. And, you know, that was my first time really being around any of these folks. I'd just fished on my own forever and learned on my own and, you know, didn't really like know anyone in fishing. And when Brian and I kind of first met Gussie and started hanging around with him, he's just like, oh yeah, frogs for largemouth. You got to be frogging for largemouth in KVI. Right. So at that time, we were lucky enough, Brian had the wacky worm. So we were wacky worming for smallmouth on the banks in between the pit bays. And once we'd get to the pit bays, we'd put the Senko down and pick up a frog. Like, you weren't allowed to put that Senko anywhere near that pit bay. And meanwhile, that's how it was just getting.
Yeah, nowadays, that's all they get thrown, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. So thanks, Gussie, for the decoy.
Yeah.
Brian would bring two boxes of Spro frogs from the Great Bear, and we would just drop them on the floor and absolutely vaporize them to pike and maybe get like three bucket muffs to weigh in by the end of the tournament.
Yeah, it reminded me of us, you know, we were flying home from the first trip up there, and Wayne Wayne was on the same flight, and he ended up sitting like right next to me on the plane.
Yeah.
And he's kind of an inquisitive guy, right? Zoomer. You know, Bob's a pretty social guy, but Wayne kind of keeps to himself. And I knew there was like a question brewing in him, right, for the flight. And where did you get all those largemouth? He says to me. And I said, buddy, I mostly have flipped docks and some undercut. He had this like bewildered look upon his face, right? He's like, docks? There aren't that many, you know, docks in the Lake of the Woods. I go, well, there's tons of docks, I said, but the largemouth docks are pretty few and far between, I would imagine. I said, yeah, I ran about 14 docks all weekend and got a, you know, a bass off every one. How did you find those 14 docks? I said, they were just back in some swamp, you know, it was the only cottages in the area. And he's like, wow, huh? Yeah, most guys don't think of that. And I said, well, that's all I fish, right? It's cane and pads and docks. So that's where largemouth lived. Back then, that's all I knew, right? So it's crazy. Like old mud portage there, brother. I weighed a 570 out of mud portage.
That's cool.
Yeah, but like I said, I didn't know
in there now.
Yeah, I didn't know anything. It was like there's some undercut, there's five docks, and let's get in there and catch them.
You just sent a bunch of people to mud portage.
Perfect.
A couple listeners are on their way right now.
Yep, dig them out.
And the back of snake, she's making a comeback.
Yeah, that was the craziest part is. Because Dave was back there, and Dave was fishing with Tom McNair, who was like the VP. And there's like grass and a lot of grass and stuff back there and pencil reeds. But there's just this one little turn that had about, you know, 50, 60 yards of floating bog undercut on it. And that's where the bass were, right? Like, that's what I was catching him in. He came out and he said he didn't even see a largemouth. So I said, well, I guess undercut's the deal then, right?
You had her figured. And you were like, you guys were like Lewis and Clark back then with your paper maps going into these bays. I wonder if anyone even knows about this bay.
Yeah, like it's, nobody was largemouth fishing, right? There was a few, like, you know, I ran into Gussie back in his little honey hole there back in the day.
Yeah, went and sore lipped a few for him.
Yeah. But we caught some fish in there though.
Yeah.
But you had to go like, you know, right to the back to like this much water. You get the odd one on a tree, you know, out on the point or whatever, but any number of fish that were back, a push pole would have been a great tool to have back then.
Yeah. I've had one on my last two boats. I've been transferring boat to boat and all I've used it. So far all I've used it for is pushing back snakes in Alabama that are heading towards your boat. No lie. That's why it sits there. Like the co-anglers jump in. The co-anglers are just shocked when they see it. They're like, what do you need this for? Like, we're offshore all damn day. It's like, oh, she's got her place, bud.
Snake wrangler. Good for you. But yeah, it's funny how fast, you know, 20 some odd years goes by, but, you know, and now I'm coming up there and I'm fishing with August.
Yeah.
Is unbelievable. And, you know, and we're going to promote the town. We're going to do a little deal with Tourism Kenora. We're going to promote the town, promote the fishing. And we're going to stay at the Lakeside Inn. So it's going to kind of be like full circle, right? My first trip up there, we all crashed at the Lakeside Inn. And
yeah, that's awesome. And it is, you know, a lot of people around here take the KBI and the Canadian Bass Championship and any of these massive tournaments for granted. That volunteers do and local sponsors help out with, you know, after being down south for a year or year and a bit, you see like these, chamber of commerce will pay, like, I don't know what it is, but I think it's somewhere in the low six figures to yep. have the Bassmaster Opens go to their town because of the economic impact, promotion for the town. You know, the tackle shops, the hotels, the restaurants, everything like that fills up. And these folks are doing it for free just out of, you know, love for the community. So, you know, just a side note there, if you're fishing KBI or anywhere around it, make sure you thank the volunteers, because this is something special. There's not a KBI in every town. It's, you know, that's my, no, that's my rant there. And you kind of have to go away from it to be able to see it.
Yeah, it's a good rant because, you know, like I mean, tournament fish, like back in the day, it was the, we had the OV Pro Bass Tour and the GM Chevy Mariner Bass Tour down here. And, you know, it was a pretty big deal, but I mean, the events every week, like you're on a tour, right?
Yeah.
And in small towns, small lakes, you know, 50 to 100 people might come out and watch. But to go up there and see, you know, like the tent, I fished Fort a couple times too, the Fort tournament. And yeah. It's a whole different world. I mean, I don't know how it compares down south. Like I did some of the Everstart stuff and nobody came to watch.
No, the opens are the same, and even the elites, like the crowds are, it's nowhere near the KBI. Yeah. The only thing that crushes it is the Classic, and that's, you know.
Right, and the KBI, I mean, if you could compare a tournament, I think you could compare the two, right? I mean.
Yeah, KBI would be second to the Classic. And Fort, like, we're talking about KBI, but Fort's a very similar layout.
Well, at Fort, here's an interesting fact. It's an old fact. It's probably not the same anymore, but Fort Francis Canadian Bass Championship used to be the second largest event for beer consumption, second to the Calgary Stampede. What? I'm not joking.
It's not from like the Molson rep or something, their stats?
Yeah, that was a fact back in, you know, the early 2000s when I was there. I mean, the porta potty parking lot out there was epic. I don't know if it's the same anymore. Like I haven't been in 15 years, so.
Yeah, I haven't been in probably 7 or so, and it's the last time I was there, it was, you know, it was still bumping.
Yeah.
They had some good bands, and like it's still a big party.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I mean. To go to the tent in Kenora and see that, you know, and it's the week after Harbor Fest, right? Like the long weekend in August. So it's probably like their, I don't know if it's their second biggest, or is it bigger than Harbor Fest?
Yeah, now it's the like the main event, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, traveling through Northwestern Ontario, if you go through Kenora in that first week, 2 weeks of August, you're going to see a town that, you know, celebrating summer.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And people wonder why there's, you know, good anglers from this tiny town in the middle of nowhere, like an angler that can win the Bassmaster Classic. That's your reason. It's the KBI. So it not only is it, you know, gives you a reason and gives you that drive, like when you finally make the tent ride and all the hype and all that, but because it attracts guys like you and Bob Azumi and Linders back in the day coming.
Like Guido Leisman.
Yeah, crazy. Right? Guido, like Leisman and Hike, you want it more than anyone. Like,
yeah.
So it was like, if you're a local, it's like, well, either we can keep getting our ass kicked by these guys or step it up, raise the bar. So,
yeah, it's amazing. Like I recall, you know, I was a bit younger and a little more adventurous when I was fishing up there, and there'd be a couple house parties, and you know, Dinger would drag me along with him to meet all these, like your crew up there, the young guns. I don't know what you guys aren't that young anymore, but and there'd be like a crowd of guys down in the basement watching some illegal internet feed of the Bassmaster Classic, right? And I'd go down there and be like, wow, these guys are like hardcore junkies for bass fishing, like, you know. And then lo and behold, 20 years later, Gussie wins the Classic. And, you know, he was one of those guys in the basement, like jonesing to watch. I can't even know. I don't know who it was. Brian Kirchhoff or somebody winning the Classic, right? It's just like, wow, this town's got something. And, I mean, you think about it. You went down and did the opens, and you kind of made a statement on your own, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, definitely wouldn't have been trying that without KBI. You know, if I grew up in Saskatoon or wherever.
Right, yeah.
Definitely wouldn't be going. Well, pretty much, if you grow up anywhere between here and your area, you know, where you see the Johnstons and Cooper and...
Yeah.
There's not much. If you grew up in Thunder Bay, you're probably not going to get that same vibe or anywhere around there. So it's just kind of weird how it plays out.
It's a pretty small pool, but if you look at what's come out of that pool, it's crazy to think, You know, some of the best anglers in the world right now are from, you know, Southern Ontario and Northwestern Ontario.
Yeah, Corey Johnson just won an Elite Series event last weekend.
Right. You know, and I mean, his dad used to be, you know, they had an ad, I think him and Bob Gardner won the Pro Bass Classic a million years ago. And they like had a Johnson ad because they're sponsored by Johnson, right? Outboards. Huh. There was an outboard called Johnson at one time.
Yeah, I had one. I spent more time with the shroud off using it as a paddle than I did actually running.
but yeah, so it's, you know, my very first bass tournament, brother, like, so that would have been early 90s, probably 92 or 3. I fished as an amateur in the Bass Ontario Classic. And I drew Hank Gibson, was my first fishing tournament partner ever. And Hank Gibson was the first Canadian to ever qualify for the Bassmaster Classic, right?
Right.
Up until a couple of years ago, I had his America's Cup light jacket with like the Bassmaster crest and the year on it and everything. And it just turned to mold and dissolved. So
that would have been a good one to wear at KBI this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I kept it for a long time, but it, anyway, gave up and it's gone. So. But I mean, there again, right? There's the history of Bass Masters in Canada. Hank was the only guy.
It's yeah. Crazy. When you first started derby slinging, like, what was the landscape? I haven't actually asked you about it, but Scotty mentioned like you used to work a night shift at a gas station and then just keep grinding right through. And you guys were making big bucks back then.
I wouldn't call big bucks. Like, I mean, well,
it's fishing. There's that's
yeah, you know, it's crazy. I could make enough money tournament fishing to quit my job in the summer and then find a new job in the winter.
Okay,
if that makes sense. But yeah, no, I got lucky. I had a girlfriend whose parents owned like a 24-hour gas bar, so I worked the night shift, you know, from 11 till 7, Sunday night to Thursday night. So like every Saturday, Sunday, I was in a tournament in the summer, and then like 5 o'clock, you'd get done the weigh-in and I'd go and crash for 2 hours and then go work the night shift at the gas bar. but my boat and truck, I had an old F-150 with two double fuel tanks in it and a Stratos boat with a Johnson on it. And, it was a buddy of mine bought that off me, and he still has it original condition right now. It's unbelievable to see that thing around. But yeah, I parked that out front of the gas bar, and I'd get off at 7 o'clock, and I'd be gone like every day, just on some lake bass fishing, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, I did a similar thing with, you know, at like a jail, and just stay up all night, go fish all day. You'd get about like five sausage McMuffins in the morning. You pretty much have to hamburger one of those like every hour just to get enough jam to stay awake.
Yeah, then you're just delirious. Consume
about 6,000 calories and start hallucinating.
Yeah, you're delirious. You do hallucinate when you stay up for hours on end like that. Some crazy.
Appreciate the grind though, and that's, you know, for a lot of people, that's what it takes to excel in it. You can't just like, no one's well rested and crushing it.
No, and I mean, the Minn Kota All Terrain was the very first like good trolling motor that ever came out.
Mm-hmm. I had one of those.
Yeah, and like if you had the other ones, like Evan Root had one, I think, and it was just like basically a egg beater on the front of your boat, right? Whip up some pancakes or froth in the water, but you couldn't get through too much weeds. And I had an All Terrain on my boat, and I didn't have any money for gas, right? Like I couldn't afford to blow through gas every day. So I would just literally pick a lake, put my trolling motor down and give her run the banks. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's how I learned how to fish, just flipping a jig at stuff. It's goofy. It doesn't work as good anymore. Flipping the old jig at stuff.
It sure does. It's made its way back around. I caught almost all my fish on a 3/4 ounce flipping jig with a Crush City cleanup craw on my one tournament in Alabama this year. And like some of my buddies down there that qualified for the elites, it's like Tyler Williams, Big Tyler, that's all he throws. He just drops a bag on the front of the deck and
yeah,
goes to town no matter where we go. It's like yeah, the last, you know.
Well, largemouth are like unicorns, though, here where I'm from now. So
really?
It's just, it's like a smallmouth game for everybody, right? So
are you still fishing, like, competitive around there?
No, I do. Like, I used to do the Canadian Open when I thought I had a chance to win it. But, you know, you see Cooper and Corey and Chris just crush it every year.
Yeah.
Tough to fish against those guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm far from my prime and I'm far from practice. Like, I spend, you know, we spent a week up fishing with you there a couple of years ago. And, you know, most of my fishing, you know, I'm mixing in walleye and white bass or lake trout or, you know, because I'm filming for TV and it's not the whole competitive side of fishing is, you know, you got to be dialed in and be on the water. So I'm not doing that anymore. So last thing I want to do on a Saturday is get up at the crack of dawn and fish a derby. I've been on the water all week, you know, filming stuff.
Bob Izumi on here right after he retired, and it's all he could talk about. His tournament, he's just chomping at the bit. He's one of the most competitive guys I've ever met.
Yeah, he just wants to fish every tournament that there is.
Give us a good Bob Izumi, he'll appreciate it.
I do a good Bob, but might not be in practice. But let me try one for you here. If I had known that when I retired, I was going to be have all this free time, I would have retired a long time ago if I could have fished more bath tournaments. You know, Wayne doesn't want to fish much anymore, but thankfully I can drag Darren along with me and, you know, tell him to get the net once in a while. God forbid he pitches in for Gaff. That's all I got, brother.
Oh man, my face is red from trying to laugh right in the mic.
It takes a while to get Bob's little gravelly sort of thing down, but I grew up watching fishing shows. I mean, I'm not unlike everybody else, right? And to go out and mimic every guy that I ever watched on TV was what I did.
Yeah, I hear that, man. When I was a kid, it wasn't Saturday morning cartoons. It was, the show you started on or were part of, Fishing Canada back in the day.
Right.
Daryl Kronze, yeah. Watching how to grill them. And now, yeah. and Bob Izumi, Mercer was later in the game. But yeah, that was kind of the trio. When, what was it, Sport Fishing Canada or whatever?
Canadian Sport Fishing, yeah.
Yeah, I'd usually start to fade. That was more of a Sunday show, background noise. But the other three were pretty awesome. And I remember the first time I saw you, you were on Fishing Canada show, and you guys were up here at, like, Ice Out on Lake of the Woods. That was a pretty good while ago.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, Gussie was our guide.
Good pick.
Yeah, we...
You don't want Jingle guiding you. He'll bring you to the worst bay on the lake. He does not divulge.
We were walleye fishing.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't you do a largemouth thing in the back of White Partridge?
Him and Petey went and caught walleye and crappies. And then we did some smallies in White Partridge. It was White Partridge. Just at the mouth when they were staging, because it was early. And then I was just flinging a spinnerbait around and caught a couple pike, but it wasn't really a bass show. It was sort of a mixed bag show. Right. That was like the year after I met him, I think. So it would have been, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
A million years ago.
Oh yeah. I was hard into the, watching the Saturday morning TV shows back then still.
Wow.
And your show is rolling.
Yeah, you know, it's a different world right now. You know, shooting a full-length 20-minute TV show is sort of like you're an ancient sort of art, I guess. It's lost art. Everything's so short format now, and everybody wants to watch the final result, right? Like, show me the fish, show me the deer, show me whatever it is. So, trying to get creative that way and make the show interesting for 20 minutes is a bit of a challenge, but people still watch, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I still watch it. I've shared your cormorant episode with so many people because it's when, well, it was right when Ontario, you know, gave us the nod and we got that landed up here too. I'm assuming it was all at the same time, but I remember, like, well, how do we do this? And you had a cormorant show shooting them in cabin country out of your Pro-V bass and with 20 gauges and stuffing them in the live well.
That's right.
Like, these cottage owners are going to freak. And no,
they were coming out and cheering for us and telling us, like, you know, asking us if they could do, you know, come back tomorrow.
That's on YouTube. Anyone listening, as soon as we're done here, you got to check it out. I'll drop the link below.
Yeah. It sounds like an easy hunt, but they're like anything else, right? You start dumping rounds off at birds and they don't want to come back to their little roosting area there. But
yeah, they were like, when you first saw the largemouth on Lake of the Woods, you're like, oh, these things are dumb. I got them cornered.
That's it.
And then, yeah, everything gets educated.
Yeah. I haven't fished for a largemouth in Lake of the Woods in a decade.
Yeah.
You slammed a few good large using your day up there. Like, you smashed a couple big bags.
Yeah, we had, We had 2014 was, well, it's the only year we won.
Wow. We had, that seems like so long ago.
Yeah. It was crazy. Cause we had the tournament record at the time was 20.54 and Gussie had it. And the only other bag over 20, Jim Gustafson and Ben had like a couple of years later. And then it just sat stagnant at that for like 8 years. And we had 2069, took the record, won the tournament, and then Gibbons crushed it with 22 the next year. And there's been like 15 bags over 20 since. It's almost like, you know, like a smallmouth now.
Yeah. Yeah. The smallie phenomena up there is, it's something to think about, right? It's, I've told people, like, you know, to put it in perspective, you know, the fishermen aren't getting better. The fish are just getting bigger, right?
Yeah,
like you used you're to have to run down to, bigger. You used to have to run down to like Morrison, you know, like to win up the river to get 4 pound smallies.
Yeah, now you can catch them in Safety Bay.
Yeah,
something to do with the 30-year tournament, bringing all the biggest fish back to Safety Bay.
There is that, but I mean, like if you look at like even here, you know, we used to think, you know, 5 and 6 and 7 pound smallmouth were like rare.
Mm-hmm.
But you could go to the Finger Lakes, you could go to Champlain, you could go like, you know, 2-3 hours south on the other side of Lake Ontario, and all those smallies were that much bigger. And then, you know, fast forward 20 years, you need 27, 28 pounds of smallies on the St. Lawrence. You need that on Lake Simcoe. 24 pounds doesn't get you anything anymore. And I mean, if you look at Lake of the Woods, it's the same thing, right? It's like as climate sort of warms up, the growing season of these fish is extended, and the further north you go, the bigger the fish get. And there was a time where you could, 12 pounds was a bag out of the north end of Lake of the Woods.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you probably weighed an 18 pound bag there, I think, in the bronzeback, right?
We've weighed 3 of them in the bronzeback now.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, it's, yeah, they're just big. It's like you can catch 14 pounds a day as 1 KBI. Before you pick a good dock on Lake of the Woods and go fish from shore, you can catch that. You know, it's not like, yeah, electronics got better and guys are getting better at catching them, but they're also getting more educated. It's, they're obviously growing. There's
right. The, so, and I mean, you know, like there's been a lot of, you know, mid 6 pound largemouth caught in KBI, but to take that chance and go and try and catch one of those is
she's a Russian roulette, because you're gonna have a flop day too. We've had a lot of panic days on the way home where we have 8 minutes to fish 11 trees and have 2 2-pound bass.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I mean, the largemouth, but, you know, with them being left alone, but there, another thing is up there is a lot of people don't realize how many other tournaments there are.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just this KBIs, this tournament. I mean, you got the bronze back, you got the Bassin for Bucks over in Sioux Narrows. And I mean, there's probably tournaments out of the south end, right?
Yeah, there's lots of one dayers, and there's plenty. It's not gross like it is in the US at some of those places, like Texas, they'll be like, guys will win two or three tournaments in one day because they'll sign up for all the tournaments that same day to let them fish alone. And they'll just like, well, a couple hours here, a couple hours there. Like, it's wild.
That's, yeah. Yeah. We don't see that yet, but we are at the point in Southern Ontario, you know, some of the bigger lakes, there'll be two events on the same lake in the same day. You know, you'll have 60, 70 boats going from the east end and the same amount going from the west end. And you're running into guys and you, it's like, what are you fishing? And they're like, yeah, but we're fishing the other tournament. So it's like, oh, does the no distance rule apply? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Guys are crowding in on guys, but they're fishing in a different event. So you never had that back in the day, right? Where lakes were crowded with tournament anglers, where now seems to be every weekend there's a tournament somewhere.
Yeah. The craziest thing I've seen is the high school tournaments. Like, we were on Wheeler Lake and there was a 300 boat high school tournament on our first, on the Saturday, our first day of practice there. And like, I almost got smoked three different occasions by three different boats in the first 10, in the first 10 minutes. There's a shad spawn going on. So lots of people were zipping around. And it's not a very big lake, and there was 425 or no, 525, 300 boats in the high school tournament, 225 for the opens.
Holy smokes.
And like, a lot of these high school tournaments, there'll be like some, you know, it'd be like, if we were in them, we would know what we're doing and would be styling around and just fine, put these kids on some fish. But lots of them is just like, oh, my kid was into golf, now he's into bass fishing high school tournament, so I got me this nitro, and you know, it'll be like head buried in the graph, not really sure which way to go on anything, and just like a bunch of super amateurs in fast boats, and it was freaking terrifying.
I bet. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's it, like I said, it's, you know, it's night and day. You know, you like when you go, you know, I fished a bit in the south, but it was back in the day when, you know, you couldn't get any advantage with electronics. You couldn't learn stuff fast. It was just like, wow, you got to put your head down and start looking. But, you know, to compare that to what we have in Southern Ontario and then to go to Northwestern Ontario, it's sort of night and day, right? Where you go out and practice on Lake of the Woods and you hope you don't run out of gas or lose your cell signal because you might not see another boat.
Yeah, and if you do see another boat in the tournament, it's a fight. Like, I know people that have lifelong grudges against each other. He's chiseling me. He's in my bay. You know, it could be a 6-mile bay. And, yeah, and
it's a 600-acre bay. Yeah,
totally different. But Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, kind of a lot of people from here go to that tournament, and that is the craziest place I've ever seen for boats, like on one spot. So that kind of,
yeah, it's like a big old Keno card and everybody's just picked a square and sits on it.
Yeah, she's a wild one. Oh well, I told you I'd only keep you for an hour. We're
it's already been an hour.
Yeah, it goes fast.
Wow.
Probably goes fast when you have a good get, like, yeah, I knew you're a good talker, so like I said, I haven't been ignoring you for the podcast by accident. It's spring, it's busy as hell up here, and I appreciate you taking the hour because I knew it'd be autopilot.
Yeah, it's too bad we couldn't talk about more other stuff, but you know,
what else you got?
Who knows? I mean, Matt, you bring up a subject and we could probably talk about it, right? Like,
we're just gonna have to get you on for another podcast.
Yeah, I think so. Makes sense.
Yeah, I'm gonna link your cormorant hunt below. I think there's a lot of viewers that might enjoy that.
Yeah, and get out there and hunt them, you know, just follow the, just don't break the rules, right? Like, you got to dispose of them properly. You know, don't make an ass of yourself out there hunting them. And it's funny, like, Ranella, there's a few guys that have like cooked them and eaten them. I've talked to people on the East Coast, like Newfoundland and that, and they eat cormorant. So, if you want to get brave and try and whip up some kind of a recipe to do that, but
I also know a guy from the East Coast that I used to guide with up north, and he would go raid seagull eggs and eat them at shore lunch. So that's a pretty raw example.
Wow. Yeah. Little surf and turf. What would you call that? Holy man. Yeah. I've never heard that before. You got me there.
I don't know where they'd lay their eggs if they, like, I have no, I didn't like, I was, my jaw was on the damn shore lunch rock when he told me I didn't have any more questions.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, like you buy an egg at the grocery store, it's unfertilized. It's got a yolk in it. Like all those eggs in those nests are fertilized. I mean, how many did he crack open that actually were not what he wanted to eat? Or was he eating whatever came out of that egg? Like that's a,
I don't know.
Itself.
Oh. He told me he's eaten pretty much everything that lives. Loons, not eggs, but like actual loons. He's got there's this crew from Northern Quebec, and they were like, they just lived. They didn't have vehicles. They had one Dodge Caravan, you know, set third row seating. Good plug for Dodge there. You're a Dodge guy. And they'd use snowmobiles all winter. They'd be, you know, racking 15,000 K on these sleds in a couple of years. And they just live up there. Then they'd come guide, you know, get their nest egg. They'd walk into Canadian Tire and like, it was, they're just in shock. But yeah, these, they're damn pioneers. So they eat everything, including seagull eggs and probably cormorants.
Tough to make them taste good, but I guess if you're hungry and you're living in a cave van, you'll eat anything.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll link your cormorant recipe below. You just step on the wings, pull on the feet, just like a grouse, fry them up. A little bit of Daryl Kronzi's breading and batter mix. He's
teriyaki
tried
sauce and go.
Yeah. 2 years in a crock pot, maybe. You'll be able to eat the damn inside of the crock pot over the cormorant.
Yeah. Well, there's probably a good recipe out there somewhere. So if anybody ever does link up with that and see it, feel free to share it.
All right, man. Well, can't wait to see it. KBI, going to be a good time as always. And thanks for taking the time to jump on.
Sure thing.
Take care, boss.
Thanks, pal.